Good afternoon. You are now listening to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. My name is Justicia and I'll be joining you until the hour of 2:30 with my colleagues Rudolph as well as Andrew will join us later on. Good afternoon, Rudolph. How are you doing?
Good afternoon, Justicia. How are you?
I'm doing great. I see you have been busy the whole morning with the College of the Arts students. I think we should drop you off that the other side. But heading into our first news item, of course, the Institute for Public Policy Research has questioned the Green Hydrogen Project. The Institute for Public Policy Research, IPPR, has questioned the $137 billion green hydrogen bid, stating that it is not transparent. According to IPPR, there is no transparency about who the other bidders were, and to date, the executive summary of the bid evaluation report of this tender has not been made public. Now, IPPR said in the report on green hydrogen that the track record of Hyphen is relevant because the Public Procurement Act 15 of 2015 states in Section 35, 4 and 5 that when assessing bids sourced through the request for proposal method, the relevant experience of the supplier is a significant consideration. Now, IPPR stated that to be fair, one of the entities involved in Hyphen has an established record in renewable energy production. IPPR added that the questions around this procurement matter related to how a six-month-old company with no track record was able to achieve the best bid for the latest tender in the nation's history. It indicated that the production of green hydrogen is highly technical, specialized, and expensive industrial activity, and a potential multi-billion US dollar contract would have attracted the interest of established firms in the renewable energy or green hydrogen production, such as Australia's Future Industries, which had been on the exploratory visit to Namibia in early 2021. According to the report, it states that the public procurement regulations is that a public entity is supposed to publish on its website a notice of procurement and the summary of the bid evaluation report within 7 days of the procurement award. However, IPPR said no such notice or summary has been published on the website of the National Planning Commission or the Office of the President over the 4 months after the award was made. According to examples that have been published by the CPBN, a summary of the bid evaluation report would include bid dates and deadlines, the numbers, the name of bidders, and how many bidders were Namibian or joint ventures, and each bid's basic, the jurisdiction for the award, the contract amount, the contract deadline, as well as the procurement method used. Thus, IPPR said the procurement tracker Namibia has asked the Office of the President why the request for the proposal method was used in this instance instead of the opening bidding method, but has not received an answer yet. Now, IPPR also stated that the procurement of Hyphen services could also appear in the third quarterly procurement report of the National Planning Commission as the contracting authority for the 2021-2022 financial year, but relevant quarterly report of October and December 2021 was not yet accessible through the procurement policy unit's webpage by the end of March 2022. According to the Business and Intellectual Property Authority, BIPA, it shows that Hyphen was registered with an agency on 5th May 2021, roughly 6 months before it was awarded the largest tender in the nation's history. Now, according to the company's website, it is a joint venture between an offshore entity called Nicholas Holding Limited and the South African subsidiary of German renewable energy company Entertracht AG South Africa, while Entertracht South Africa has been in operation since 2017 and the German mother company has been in business since the early 1990s, and there is much information available online about the business and the activities over the last 3 decades. However, Nicholas Holdings Limited is something of a mystery. This is what the APPR is saying. Now, according to online reports, it is registered in the British Virgin Islands, an offshore tax haven that has attracted considerable scrutiny over the last decade or so, and as a jurisdiction that has enabled tax avoidance and invasion by the global rich, famous, and connected. According to IPPR, because of the secrecy surrounding the company's registration in shore tax havens such as British Virgin Islands, it is unclear who the beneficial owners of Nicholas Holding Limited are, and the brief description of Nicholas Holding Limited on Hyphen website states that it is a strategic investor, project developer in Europe and Africa through its subsidiaries Principal Capital. Now, the link arrow on the brief description of Nicholas Holdings Limited on the Hyphen website clicks through a website of Principal Capital Group, where the website appears to have last been updated in 2011. Now, according to IPPR, the website Principal Capital Group was founded in 2004, and it is a private investment group holding a number of significant investment. In the website's list, five entities in which Principal Capital Group appears to be a hold stake, and some of which are also registered British Virgin Islands or other British offshore tax haven and the Isle of Man. Now, IPPR also states that from the information available on the entity's website, there is no indication that the Principal Capital Group has any experience in funding, developing, or managing a large-scale renewable project of the potential scale of Namibia's green hydrogen project. However, Procurement Tracker Namibia said it would provide an update if and when the Office of the President eventually responds to the questions sent to them in early March 2022. Now, earlier last year, this is in regards to the 26th UN Climate Change Conference, COP26, that ran from the 31st of October and November in Glasgow, UK. Namibian President Hage Geingob announced that his government had just designed and are about to award the largest tender in Namibia's history in record time to initiate a green hydrogen project. Shortly afterwards, Hyphen Hydrogen Energy was announced as the winning bidder of 40-year concession to kickstart the Namibian government's multi-billion US dollar green hydrogen project. And towards the end of the year, Hyphen was contracted by the National Planning Commission in the Office of the President, and reports show that Presidential Advisor James Manupe saying that in November 2021, the government had raised $1 million just from the bidding documents and 50,000 per set, and it gives you an indication of how many people bought the documents just to look at it. This was said by the President Advisor. He further indicates that that amounts to the 20 sets of documents having been brought by the potential bidders, stating that he described the procurement process that led to the emergence of the Hyphen as the winning bidder as objective and transparent. However, this is where things become tricky, as the IPPR had said that over 4 months since the announcement of Hyphen as the preferred technical partner to kickstart Namibia's green hydrogen project, transparency around the procurement process involved remains lagging. And on 8th March 2022, the Procurement Tracker Namibia sent a number of questions related to this procurement matter to the Office of the President, specifically to the Presidential Advisor, the Green Hydrogen Project Commissioner, and the Presidential Advisor on Economics. It's exactly 12 minutes past the hour of one, and of course, you continue to listen to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. We are going to take a short commercial break and we'll be back with more news.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always Wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers.
Limit or avoid travel and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.
Of course, you continue to listen to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. Now, the value of exports increased by 47.1% in February 2022, and this is to 5.7 billion Namibian dollars, while the value of imports increased by 51.7% for the same period to 9.6 billion Namibian dollars, leading to a trade deficit of 3.8 billion. A Simony Storms report on trade statistics revealed this morning. According to Simony Storms, export products were mainly from the manufacturing categories, of which it made up 68.3%, and the mining sector making 25.7%, and agriculture has 4.7%, and were mainly destined to the rest of Africa, Asia, and Europe. The report indicates that the biggest contributors to exports in February 2022 were diamonds at 35.6%, uranium at 1 billion in the last 12 months, fish, gold and copper blisters at 81.1%, and the main contributors pertaining to imports were vessels that stood at 3 million to 2.5 billion, petroleum oils at 28.2%, chemicals, motor vehicles at 13.9%, and alcohol beverages at 46%. According to the preliminary national accounts, Namibia recorded an annual trade deficit of 29.3 billion in 2021, with a monthly average trade deficit of 2.4 billion, and the current account balance deteriorated as a result of the trade deficit and decreased in secondary income flows and lower in the SACU revenue. Now, the current account recorded a deficit of 16.5 billion Namibian dollars during 2021, which is 9.1% of the GDP, compared to a surplus of 4.9 billion in 2020. However, growth in the value of Namibia's exports are mainly driven by inflation effects. We have Simony Storms economist Theo Klein to give us more on this.
The value of Namibian exports is mainly driven by inflationary effects. If we look at the data, we see that Namibia exported about 2.4 ton worth of exports in 2021 compared to 5.4 tons in 2004. Yet the value of exports has increased from 20 billion Namibian dollars to just under 70 billion between 2004 and 2021. This tells us that Namibia has not increased its production in the products that it exports and has relied mainly on beneficial exchange rates, global commodity prices, and general inflation to boost the value of its exports.
Now, since 2004, the quantity of exports has declined by 4.3% on an annual basis between 2004 and 2021, whereas the value of exports have increased by 7.4% on an annual basis during the same period. However, adjusted for inflation, the value of exports only increased by 2.3% on an annual basis during the same period. Now, this means that inflation accounts for about 41% of the differential between export value and quantity. In terms of export quantity, Namibia exported 2.4 ton worth of exports in 2021 compared to 5.4 ton in 2004. Now, the differential between the deflated export value and quantity could be explained by exchange rates effects and global commodity prices effects, among others. However, the report highlights that export growth is not necessarily driven by increased local production in terms of sector, but rather driven by inflation and exchange rate effects. Thus, the report says the value of imports increased by 9.6% on an annual basis between 2004 and 2021 and only 7.8% when accounting for inflation. Furthermore, the report indicated that Namibia deflated the import value using a combination of consumer price indices from Namibia's main trading partners and that inflation only accounts for 18% between the value and the quantity of imports. On the other hand, the quantity of imports decreased by 2.3% on an annual basis for the same period, and Namibia imported 5.3 ton worth of imports in 2021 compared to 8.1 tons in 2004. Now the remaining differential between import value and quantity can also be described to quality, as the economy grew by 5.2% on an average between 2004 and 2015. Now Namibians were able to import higher quality goods, indicating that, for example, technological advancements increased the number of electronic features in cars, fridges, cell phones, amongst others, and thus the quality of imported goods also increased over time, and the remaining could also be described to the exchange rate effect, amongst others. Thus, Klein said the value of exports have been mainly increasing due to the better prices.
So the value of exports have mainly been increasing because of better prices, which contributes positively to the GDP calculation, which is a measure of the economy's performance. However, as we see, the quantity has come down since 2004, meaning that not a lot of jobs have been created or supported by industries that export their products.
Now, the report states that the elevated commodity prices will bond well for export earnings from local mines. However, a stronger forecasted rand will be limited on this. They indicate that the forecast on an average rand of 14 rand against the US dollar in 2022, and at the same time, elevated global commodity prices will keep imported merchandise goods prices high, adding to local inflation pressures. Once again, they say that Namibia is to see the need to enhance productive capabilities in manufacturing sector to replace certain merchandise goods imports as far as possible. That is what we're getting right there from the trade statistics. It's exactly 21 minutes past the hour of one. And of course, you continue to listen to On The Radar right here on Eagle FM. We are going to take a short commercial break, and we'll be back with more news.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken, some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Every Audi and VW owner knows the secret, and today we let the cat out of the bag. Global Parts Namibia is your number one aftermarket parts supplier of choice. We offer a wide range of quality parts for all your German car needs, and our quality is guaranteed. Get exactly what you need for your favorite car brand, Volkswagen and Audi. Quality parts at affordable prices, because we care for you. Global Parts, global reach for best local advice and prices.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken,
some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers,
limit or avoid travel, and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer, and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Students at the College of Arts today morning gathered at the Ministry of Education demanding for lecturers and better equipment at their college. The students claim that quota is not being taken seriously by the Ministry of Education, hence they want answers. Speaking with the president of the Student Representative Council, Theoporina Matthew, said that for 4 months there has been no classes going on at the college, yet they are paying tuition.
What is currently happening today, we the students of College of the Arts have decided to come out to the ministry, to come from the College of the Arts to the ministry, demonstrating, demanding change for College of the Arts. So what is currently happening, we are gathered right here at the gate of Ministry of Education, Arts and Culture, and there is no one to receive us, unfortunately. We don't know what that says for them, but we are standing here and we are demanding answers. We are demanding for our lecturers to be compensated. We are demanding for us to, we are demanding for them to buy us equipment, because, for example, we cannot have 4 working cameras for over 40 students. It's redundant, and we are paying our tuition fees in full. We have sent out a letter to the Director of Arts, to Ms. Sanette Steenkamp, their secretaries and their PAs, and as the officers spoke to them this morning, just to follow up, they said we can demonstrate if we want to. However, there is no one to receive our letter, there is no one to receive our demands, and there is no one to receive our petition should we have one. So we are just standing here in hope, in solidarity and in hope to have answers, even though they said they are not going to receive us, claiming that they did not receive our letter, but they have received the minutes that we have attached to this very same email where the letter was. So, yes.
Theopoline, understand that apparently, according to the letter that we got from the, which was authored by your rector, it says 16 staff members were appointed unprocedurally. How did that happen?
That's why we are that is exactly one of the reasons why we are standing here today. We want to find out how were we being taught by hand-picked lecturers, how are we having hand-picked staff members, and also what was the procedure, where did the HR fail the College of the Arts? Because we, the student of the arts, we are standing here feeling that we have been failed by the Director of Arts, we have been failed by the Ministry of Education, we have been failed by anybody that is in charge, because it has just come to us now. Last week only, we have been told that we have been taught by hand-picked staff or lecturers per se. So we are here to find out the very same answer. We are here to find out the very same answer. How did that happen?
I understand it for the whole of this semester, so there are some courses which were not taught. And how did this affect the students?
This is affecting the students very negatively, because there are departments that, as we speak, we don't even have first years, and we are in April, and first years school is supposed to start, registration is in January, school is supposed to commence already in February. We are in April. There are certain departments that do not have first years. Certain departments only started teaching first years, I believe only 2 or 3 weeks in, and we are already in April, and the very same staff lecturers or staff part-time staff that have been handpicked. They have not been paid since the year commenced, hence why they decided to freeze their positions, and they've also decided to boycott and not come to teach us because they have not been compensated for the work already done for the past 2 months. So we have already lost out a month and more of lessons, but we have paid our tuition fees. So this is very inconveniencing and it's uncalled for, and we really need a change.
Like you said, the Minister of Education, Art and Culture said, you guys can demonstrate if you want. Now, if you didn't get the answers that you guys are searching for, what are you going to do as students?
If we do not get the answers that we are searching for, already them not receiving us is an answer. It shows us how incompetent they are and how incompetent they are, because if they really did care about the College of the Arts, if they did care about our education, they will come receive us and they will listen. They will listen because they owe us that much. They owe us that much of a responsibility to come and listen to what we have to say. So if we do not get the answers that we are looking for, we will continue making noise. We will continue getting the media involved, and we will continue pursuing, and we will continue knocking on their offices until we get what we want, until we get what we deserve, until we get what we are paying for.
You as a leader, as an SRC leader and the leader of other students, do you see the downfall of the College of Art?
Yes, I see the downfall slowly of the College of the Arts, because I'm speaking as an alumni of the College of the Arts and currently now a second year student of the College of the Arts. And this is not something that is new to the ministry's table. This is not something that is new to the director of arts table. This is not something that is new to the quota management table. This is something that has been ongoing for years, dating back to the demonstration that took place in 2017. And in that report, when the ministry responded, they said they will give us better lecturers, they will give us qualified lecturers, they will buy us equipment, but we stand where we still don't have equipment, where we still don't have lecturers, where we are constantly paying each and every single year. The tuition fee gets increased by 10%. So why are we paying 10% increment each and every single year, but we are not getting anything out of our money? Our parents are constantly asking and complaining that we are going to school each and every single morning, but there is nothing to show for it. Only a few kids get assignments. And departments are now fishing out to get donations where it should not be. We should only, as an art institution, or rather as a higher learning institution, donations should only happen when there is a lag, and also when we have seen that the ministry, yes, did try to get the equipment, but then there was a cut in the budget somewhere. We want answers, and we want them now, because everything that we have been told has not come to fruition. Everything that, all the promises that we have been told, they have not come to pass. That's why we are here today.
With the experience that you have with this now so-called picked up staff members, from your experience, were they good?
Yes, the handpicked lecturers were good. They did teach us, and we understood what they were teaching us. They have the experience and they have the knowledge. So we want to find out, why did they have to handpick these lecturers, whereas they could have just encouraged them to go through the right procedure of applying through HR? Because if they are handpicking somebody, then that is illegal hiring.
Is it probably a way of taking people for advantage of, so to say, cheap labor to appoint people unprocedurally?
I cannot give a proper answer to that question. That is why we are standing here, so that they can answer those very same questions, the whys, the hows, and the ways. Why are we being taught by handpicked? Is there a loophole in the HR? Don't we have HR in place? Don't they have a directorate in place? Don't they have secretaries in place? Because everything is supposed to go through a chain. Just like they have told us that if we want to demonstrate, we have to write letters. We wrote letters and they said they will not receive us.
And now that you are gathered here this morning, who do you really want to meet?
We want to meet Mr. Ned Steenkamp. We want to meet Ms. Makariko, who is the director of arts. We want to meet each and every single person that is in charge, whether it is their secretaries, their personal assistants. We need to meet someone today because we need to be heard today.
They said you can demonstrate who, if you want. Who said that?
Ms. Annette Steenkamp, one of the officers came to Ms. Annette Steenkamp in the morning to follow up with the procedures to make sure and to ask whether they are ready to receive us. And apparently, she said she received the minutes of the meeting that we held with our rector on the 31st of March, right? She received that email. She received the minutes, but apparently she did not receive a written notice, which for us is worrisome because the written notice was in that very same email where the minutes were.
Denzel Mupunga, third-year TV and production student, claimed that quota supposed to fall under the Ministry of Higher Education, but it's under the Ministry of Education, Art and Culture. He claimed that some of them, their bursary are being pulled back because there is nothing happening at the college. You said you are looking, we want change and you want answers. How do you feel about the whole situation here?
Thank you very much for giving me the platform. But what I think is just that the management is not holding accountable of the what is happening at the college, because so far since last year, November, December, the part-time lecturers haven't got paid. And now they decided just to leave. And since that we are here now at the ministry, we heard that now the officials are not here. The building is going to be disinfected, which shows that no, they just don't want to be there for us. And also another thing is about the equipments at the college. You know, as we are the media students, you need to have stuff that you need to edit. And at the college so far, there's no computer, Zooms that we are using the AGs for, and it's not sustainable for all of us. So these are some of the things that are letting us to demonstrate at this moment.
I understand a lot of students were not apparently taught from the beginning of the year. How did this affect the student at large?
Yeah, I think this has affected us a lot, because when you look, we have third years that need to go on internships. And so far it is now, I think, 2 months and lessons haven't gone on. So I think it's also going to affect the internship of those that are going for internship at different media houses. So I think we are much behind in this. So we are going to be affected a lot.
What are the precautions that you put in consideration if you guys did not get the answers that you are searching for?
What we think so far is that since it seems like now that the officials are not here from the ministry, if nothing is going to be held accountable, we make sure that we are going to march to the parliament and make sure that we are going to lock down the college, so the ministry should be held responsible for this and give us the right answers that we need.
Deputy Executive Director Gerard Fries told the media that there has been historical grounds where the College of Arts used to appoint lecturers, but the ministry is currently working on it.
I cannot speak for 2017 mm-hmm. and what the concerns were that were raised then. I can speak from the point it was brought to our attention about the 17 lecturers who were requesting for their payment. Subsequent to that request, meetings were held. In total, already 3, where additional information was requested from the ministry about the conditions of employment, periods of employment, qualifications, circumstances under which these lecturers were appointed. The teaching loads that they are carrying, attendance registers of students, all of that has been requested. Why was this necessary? To ascertain if these staff members have been appointed appropriately or have been introduced into the system appropriately, the system of employment. Why was this necessary? Because as the ministry, and specifically the Department of Lifelong Learning, Arts and Culture, where this the College of the Arts resort under a directorate, it was necessary to ensure that if any payments relating to teachers are affected, that all the requirements for its proper payment is put in place and have been met. So that's relating to the payment of the lecturers. The amounts that were mooted, we've asked many questions about it. how these amounts came about, periods of employment, and from where it would be paid. Because remember, no extra budgetary payments can be made due to the Treasury regulations under which we operate. And based on the gathering of all that information, the decision will be made and will be communicated. So that is for now what I'd like to say relating to the payment of the lecturers. Now, relating to the historical context of which ministry the College of the Arts resorts under, there was some historical decisions way back then, but we are in the process of gradually trying to resolve the problems that were raised by both the lecturers and the students, and also to resolve the curriculum that is offered at the College of the Arts through Namibia Qualifications Authority. So that is what I would like to say for now relating to your question.
Yes, 17 lecturers were appointed, and it was picked up that it was unprocedural. How did the college appoint 17 staff members unprocedural? Was the ministry aware of this? And who is to be blamed on this?
Yes, as I mentioned earlier, we collected all the information, but because it relates to a human resources matter, we cannot respond either way about who is to be blamed, who is not to be blamed. We have collected the information and are busy studying it so that there could be an outcome that resolves it in the best possible way. So that's unfortunately the reach of my answer for now that I can render to you. It is on record that these persons have been on at the College of the Arts, and that's the starting point from where we are moving. So that is unfortunately for today what I can say. We are compiling the information, and we will also communicate the outcome in due course to the students' representatives that are in the other room, and also to the media based on what our learnings are about the appointment of those lecturers. Thank you.
The Executive Director of Education last week said that all the appointments or all the staff members of the College of Arts are now going to employed through the office of the Prime Minister. Has it been a norm for the College of Art to appoint lecturers?
There are some historical practices, and at the ministry we are aligning all appointment requirements with present day directives, and that is the background against which the executive director spoke. This whole process is part of those directives that we are implementing.
That is what we're getting from the College of the Arts, whereby students took to the streets as well as to the Office of Education, Arts and Cultures, demanding for answers in regards to their future at the college. It's exactly 42 minutes past the hour of one. You continue to listen to On the Radar right here on Eagle FM. We're going to take a short commercial break and we'll be back with more news. But do feel free to contact us in studio and contribute to our news bulletins. That is, of course, on 083-288-401.
To our valued listeners and all Namibians, we are living in unprecedented times which have seen some extraordinary steps being taken. some of which have suspended the most basic of human rights.
And this is because for the first time ever since our country won its independence, we have been hit by a dangerous virus, which is a threat to our livelihoods, the COVID-19.
The situation calls for us not to panic, but to work together and eradicate the spread of the virus. At Eagle FM, we urge you to always wash your hands with soap or use hand sanitizers.
Limit or avoid travel and respect our laws and obey authority.
We have the answer and we will fight this the Namibian way. As Namibians, together, as one Namibia, one nation. Let's stand together against COVID-19.
Now, yesterday, Finance Minister Ipumbu Shimi responded to matters raised during the second reading of the 2022-2023 Appropriation Bill and the 2022-2023 Expenditure Framework. According to Shimi, he encouraged the non-executive members of the National Assembly to attend consultative meetings. However, their latest letter was sent out on 14 October 2021 and the meeting took place on 25 October 2022, stating that unfortunately these meetings are poorly attended and it appears that most of the non-executive members are not interested in the budget preparation.
Honorable Speaker, honorable members, I hereby rise to respond to questions, comments, and matters that have been raised during the second reading of the Appropriation Bill 2022-2023 and the Expenditure Framework. First of all, I would like to extend my sincere thanks to the honorable members who have taken the floor and made contributions to the budget proposal. We have listened very attentively to your contributions and found some of your contributions valuable food for thought, which we will incorporate in our budget planning and execution going forward. Regrettably, some of the interventions are mere general statements, not based on facts, research, and therefore will not be helpful in formulating future budgets. I will not respond to all questions, but I will address the issues raised during the debate in a thematic fashion. A concern has been raised that we do not consult adequately. We do not consult all the relevant stakeholders adequately, particularly political parties, during the budget preparation process. In the run-up to the midterm review, which determines the future budget policy direction, we always write to the Office of the Speaker, requesting the office to convene a budget consultative meeting with chief whips of political parties represented in Parliament. Even more, we encourage non-executive members of the National Assembly to attend consultative meetings. Our latest letter was sent out on the 14th of October 2021 and the consultative meeting took place on the 25th of October 2021. And this is Exhibit 1. This is the letter that I'm talking about. I have more exhibits if you want me to show more exhibits. Unfortunately, these meetings are poorly attended. It appears that most of the non-executive members are not genuinely interested in providing input into the budget preparation. They are only interested in complaining about the lack of consultation during the budget debate. Honorable members, it is important to be truthful to the Namibian nation.
Now, in regards to confusion, Shimi stated that some members lamented that the size of the budget deficit and consequently the increase in government debt, yet the same members are the ones advocating for the increase of civil servant wages.
Yet the same honorable members are also the ones professing the increase in civil servant wages. This is a contradiction, honorable speaker, because increasing salaries of civil servants will worsen the deficit, and consequently the debt, or Namibia's debt, will become unsustainable. We are left to wonder whether these contradictory statements are made for political posturing purposes or are as a result of a lack of understanding on how things work in real life. I would like to advise the honorable members who are making these contradictory statements to desist from doing so because they are confusing the nation.
Now, in regards to critics of youth employment, Shimi added that a strategy was crafted to grow the economy in a way that it would create jobs, including youth employment.
A number of honorable members have rightly pointed out the need to create economic opportunities for the youth with a view to reducing youth unemployment. It is a fact that unemployment is a problem, and this is not a new problem, nor is it a post-independence phenomenon. High unemployment has been with us for a considerable period of time. We need to recognize, however, that the decline in commodity prices in 2015, persistent drought since then, and the devastation of COVID-19 have exacerbated the problem. It is also true that youth unemployment is not only unique to Namibia, but it's a regional and a continental challenge. Youth unemployment is estimated at 40% in Namibia, about 55% in South Africa, about 46% in Eswatini, about 35% in Lesotho, and about 36% in Botswana, a country considered to be a poster child of economic development. Even in countries with relatively low unemployment, low youth unemployment, Honorable Fred, listen, I'm coming to the solution. Yes, just listen.
Order, please.
Yeah. Very good. So, even in countries, Honorable Speaker, with relatively low youth unemployment, the level of underemployment among the youth could be as high as 70%, meaning a high percentage of youth is doing odd jobs that do not fully occupy them. Honorable Speaker, analogous to medicine, before a medical doctor gives a treatment regime to a patient, the doctor needs to do a thorough examination of the patient. Else, she or he risks misdiagnosing the patient, resulting in a wrong treatment. As Alexander Pope once said, and I want to quote, little learning is a dangerous thing, end of quote. It is therefore critical that before we offer solutions to youth unemployment in Namibia, we do a proper diagnosis. Youth unemployment should not be seen in isolation, but should be understood in the context of the general high unemployment situation in Namibia. The rate of high unemployment can be explained by a number of factors, including the long-term impact of many years of deprivation and underdevelopment during the colonial period, among others. Today, however, I will just focus on the structure of the economy. Like many other countries, the Namibian economy is dominated by the extractive and service sectors. The extractive sector is by nature a capital-intensive sector, and is increasingly becoming more so, especially in diamond mining, where much mining activities are now taking place offshore. By implication, although this sector significantly contributes to GDP and exports of the country, it does not create enough jobs. Traditionally, most youth who were unemployed are those with low level of educational attainment. This situation has now changed. For the cohort between 15 and 25 years of age, unemployment is largely the same, irrespective of the level of education. There have been some assertions that employers are being selective because they only want to hire older people and should therefore be forced to hire the youth instead of their older brothers and sisters. This is another misdiagnosis of the disease. The fact that employers prefer older people is just symptomatic of the fact that there are many people who are looking for work. Therefore, given a choice, employers will naturally hire the older and mature ones. I therefore dare to say that the solution to unemployment largely lies in changing the structure of the Namibian economy. with a view to creating more job opportunities for every Namibian, including the youth. I concede that diversifying the economy is a difficult undertaking which requires interventions from different angles, but I believe Namibia is moving in the right direction to grow and diversify the economy in a way that will create jobs for the youth. The implementation of HPP2 plan will go a long way in addressing the unemployment problem, particularly youth unemployment. Pillar 2 of HPP2 contains clear goals to grow the economy and find new engines of growth. What has been done since the launch of HPP2 in March last year? Government conducted a deeper assessment, namely growth diagnostics, because we have to diagnose the disease properly before you give a treatment. Using new tools with a view to developing a diversification strategy. This assessment, using over 50 years of world data and country experiences, confirmed that countries that have successfully diversified their economies are those that are producing diverse and complex products. These countries have used existing know-how in the country to move to the nearest products in the product space that are using the same know-how while learning new skills. These countries also blend the existing domestic know-how in the country by bringing into the country complementary skills that will create opportunities for local people. The emphasis here, Honorable Speaker, is complementary skills, not those that will replace the hiring of locals with foreigners. The growth diagnostic assessment also confirmed that Namibia's complexity index is relatively low compared to her peers, the upper middle income countries. Based on the above findings, a diversification strategy was crafted to grow the economy in a way that creates jobs, including youth unemployment.
Shimi added that the strategy identified 97 products from an assessment of 1,200 products in the product space that has the potential to diversify the Namibian economy successfully. He said the identified products were subjected to both feasible and attractive factors, and one of the attractive factors assessed was ability to create employment for the youth and women. And he said, I pointed out in mid-year budget statement in November 2021, the 97 products are grouped in 5 themes, mainly food industries, mining, transportation and logistic equipment, chemical and basic materials, as well as electronics. Furthermore, Shimi said he mentioned in the budget statement a few weeks ago, a tool has also been developed to guide investment promotion by the Namibia Investment Promotion and Development Board and Namibia embassies. He says this tool will be used, amongst others, to map out potential investors in these industries, where they are located and countries in which they are currently investing. Adding that a productivity task forces will be established to engage business operating in the identified industries to remove binding constraints to growth and employment creation. He said the first productivity task force in the high value fruit subsector has kicked off in December 2021 and is currently in full swing. He said this sector is deliberately selected to allow Namibia to learn how to manage productivity task force before they move to more complex industries. Speaking in the National Assembly yesterday, Shimi concluded that he would like to urge the members of parliament to get involved in youth matters, as he believes that some members' youth development is a subject only to be discussed during parliamentary debates to score political goals. He said to some members, including myself, youth employment is a cause to be pursued at all times. We eat, we drink, we sleep this stuff, and we put our money where our mouths are. For the honorable members, the money is yet to follow the mouth. It is high time that we do so, he concluded.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not a fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the hour.
It's exactly 3 minutes to the hour of two. We'll now be heading into a State of Nation Address review before we cross over to Parliament, whereby President Hage Geingob will be delivering his State of Nation Address speech. And my colleague Wanda will take you through this review.
Just to say, good afternoon.
Afternoon, Wanda. How are you doing?
We've never been here together, right?
No, this is the first time.
This is the first time.
Now you must buy me coffee.
I will, definitely.
Yes.
All right. Talk to you later.
All right.
Okay.
On the Radar, an Eagle News program that takes you beyond the streets and brings you closer to national and international breaking news as it unfolds. Tune in every Monday to Friday from 1 to 2:30.